those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Alrighty. And welcome back to the Drive Time. Well, it is Wednesday. It's Wednesday, May 10th. And joining me in the studio is our good friend Rob Washburn. And we are going to be talking about so much today. Lots of stuff for us to talk about. Actually, there is a plethora of things that we've talked about in the last year or so. Well, since January 27th, actually, we've gone through just a whole list of topics. And we're going to probably look at some of those and what came about as a result of the conversations. Before we get to that, though, here is Bruce Cockburn. And Call It Democracy on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Have it with power. Here they come. International loan sharks backed by the guns of market hungry military profiteers. Is a swamp and his brow is smeared with the blood of the poor. Who rob life of its quality, who render rage a necessity by turning countries into labor camps, modern slavers and dragons, champions of freedom. And cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations, idolatry of ideology. North, south, east, west, kill the best and buy the rest. It's just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really give a flying fuck about the people in misery. IMF, dirty IMF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. The ladies shake hands with the fellows, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello. And they call it democracy. 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 You see the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of it the way kids do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast to find yourself staring down the throat of the beast they call a revolution. IMF, dirty IMF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. And they call it democracy. And they call it democracy.
Thank you.
Bruce Colburn, call it democracy and call it whatever you want. But if people don't vote, it's still just a kleptocracy. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is The Drive Time. This is our weekly installment of Consider This Live. And as I said before, Rob and I haven't had a day alone, just that he and I in the studio, since January 27th. I can't believe it's been that long, Rob.
It's absolutely surprising to me as well, Dave. I couldn't believe it when I was going back and checking our podcasts on my website. I went back to January 27th. And I thought, holy cow, we've had a lot of guests, and it's been great. We've talked about a lot of fabulous topics. Mm-hmm. But it's always nice, you know, when you and I can get to sit down and maybe mow the grass on a couple of these again. But we have some breaking news. Press release just came out around 5:15 this afternoon from the hospital. Yep. In regards to this strategic plan that they've released. I guess they must have had their meeting the other night and have approved it, so now it's being made public. So a very exciting document in terms of setting out for, I guess, from 2018 to 2021, I believe, are the dates on that?
Yeah, 2017, 18, and then to 2020, 2021.
So it sounds like a five-year plan, and some very, very interesting comments. A lot of public consultation went into this one, a lot of focus groups. I know they were on the show back a couple months ago. We had the chief executive officer.
Well, we had Jack Russell on, the chair of the board.
That's right.
And we had Linda Davis on.
That's right. Thanks for helping me out
there.
So they were on the show, and we talked about the process that was going on at that time, and this is the results of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's most interesting, though, is in terms of their strategic objectives and priorities, I don't think there's much there that has changed. I mean, they still break it down into four main areas: quality and safety, great place to work and volunteer, collaborative community partnerships, and operational excellence. Mm-hmm. Nothing there that really stands out. I mean, they're talking about improving outcomes and patient and family experience. They talk about building on the leadership and senior care in preparation for rising community needs,
mm-hmm.
expanding the palliative care and end-of-life capacity in our community, and advanced mental health supports in our community. All things that we've talked to them about in the past. I guess what really matters, and you can't expect this in a strategic plan, but what really matters is how does that work when you hit the ground?
Well, yeah, how's that being rolled out to the actual public and patients who are going to be receiving the service?
You know, it's interesting, too, because a couple of weeks ago we had Family Mental Health Services here talking about Janet Irvin, talking about the services they provide, and they were saying that they feel underutilized within the community. And mm-hmm. I wonder if the hospital will be considering maybe working more closely with organizations like that one, because they provide a free or a low-cost alternative for counseling and mental health services. They can also act as a triage center, which mm-hmm. might take some of the pressure off of the hospital, people going there when they're having a mental health crisis.
Yeah, and part of the problem for them, of course, is underfunding.
And when they come in, it costs the province hospital rates, whereas something like that, mm-hmm. they might be able to do it more cost effectively.
Well, and they would, and I'm sure they would appreciate the opportunity to prove that they can do that. But the issue for them, of course, as I said a moment ago, was lack of funding. I mean, and they've gone to the various – am I correct on this?
No, you're absolutely correct.
I mean, she's gone to the municipal governments locally to try and get them to pony up some funds.
Yep.
Only one – even met with them.
But, you know, it might be worth their time for, you know, what would it cost if the hospital was to share some funding with the community mental health to they probably could do it a lot cheaper than it would cost if to fund their own services mm-hmm. and their own.
And maybe the hospital could sponsor them.
That's right. Some sort of a financial agreement.
Yeah, some type of a sponsorship program. Because, again, as you mentioned, they could save – I mean, where it costs them pennies on the dollar
yes.
to provide their service, it costs dollars to provide mm-hmm. the service at the hospital. So, I mean, again, the only way that would happen is if somebody could put that on paper, put that in writing to say, here's how your return on investment works for you on this one, as opposed to how it would work if someone was receiving those services in hospital.
Well, and we just saw in tonight's newspaper some announcement about a petition going to the provincial government in regards to oral health care.
Yep.
And one of the things that's mentioned in the article is that there is the Northumberland Oral Health Association or Coalition, which I didn't even know existed, but it's the hospital and social service agencies and dental healthcare professionals combining together to do this petition to say, hey, can we offer services not at the hospital? Because, you know, people go in there with a dental problem, and the best that's going to happen to them is they'll get some painkillers. I mean, they're not going to really treat the cause of the discomfort because there isn't a dentist at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're prepared to work cooperatively with organizations like this oral healthcare group, why not do the same with this mental health?
Well, and a couple of points to me. And again, the story is in today's paper, Valerie McDonald. It's actually yesterday's paper, but I'm looking at it online. They're calling for the Ontario government to expand publicly funded dental assistance programs to cover low-income adults and seniors. And they're continuing with their media release, stating the petition is part of a province-wide effort to help improve the current situation. Hospital emergency departments have been dealing with the situation, and an evaluation of the financial impact for 2015 is that it costs the two hospitals in Northumberland $180,000 with 351 dental emergency visits. Dental-related visits to hospital ERs are a poor use of healthcare dollars that could be better spent on prevention and treatment programs, according to one of the representatives who said the release states that it also estimates that dental visits to a hospital emergency room in Ontario takes place every 9 minutes. Every 9 minutes. So they are happy. By the way, Lou Rinaldi is going to be taking this petition, which they have presented to him with some 625 signatures on it so far. Sorry, 325 signatures. They're going to be passing it on. Lou has generously offered to bring it into the Ontario government. And, of course, he is the government's chair, caucus chair. So he definitely make the presentation. Man, he's got his plate full. I mean, we talked to him about being a donor. We wanted to move forward with that legislation on donors, organ donors, listeners, where instead of having to opt into the program, that Ontarians would have to opt out of the program. Mm-hmm. And that was a process that was actually started by former MPP Rob Milligan when he went to introduce his private members bill. Remember, and the Ontario government decided, no, we're going to adopt this. Well, that was before the last provincial election, which we know next year is the end of that mandate, so they've done nothing about it. Lou has assured me that it is still working its way through channels, but I'd like to hear more about where that's going and whether or not that's going to be an issue that will be resolved, because being a donor, an organ donor, is not as easy as one had thought.
Well, you know, part of the strategic plan at the hospital that you mentioned all these things. I mean, they talk about the collaborative community partnerships being a strategic objective and priority.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about the support of development for more integrated healthcare experience for patients in the community, and also to develop innovative local partnerships. And, you know, I think one of the things that's got to come out of this is the need for their leadership. I've argued this in my columns, and you and I have talked about this before as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are really a pivotal organization, really like a lighthouse for the rest of the community when it comes to healthcare. I mean, we all sort of drift towards the hospital when we're looking for emergency or all kinds of care. And they're probably in the strongest position to be able to go out into the community and really stimulate these kinds of partnerships.
It's true. You know, if healthcare was a tree, the Northumberland Hills Hospital would be the trunk and the root of that tree.
I agree.
And I think that if they spread their branches across the county and include access to dental care, for instance, that doesn't necessarily have to be done. Again, we're talking about community partnerships and maybe even a sponsorship whereby instead of spending, what was the number again here from the province? Let me just pull this number up real quickly here. $180,000 in 2015. Instead of spending $180,000 of hospital budget money, they could probably spend a third of that working in community partnership with the Family Dental Center, for instance, to provide emergency care to cover people, or working, because we know that people who are on ODSP and who are on Ontario Works get access to dental care that's covered. And that's mm-hmm. But we're talking about emergency care. We're not talking about preventative care. And I think the heart and soul of what this petition is about prevention.
Well, you know, you look at local dentist's office, and oftentimes the hours are not convenient, one, for people who work. You know, it's mm-hmm. hard to get evening hours, weekend hours. You know, on a Sunday, what do you do if you chip a tooth on a Sunday? Right. And in some cases, these emergencies, to be able to go in and to have somebody even just be able to give a temporary filling, something that might take a very little time. And mm-hmm. and then, you know, the rest of the logistics can be figured out later. So it's interesting to see how these things are going to progress forward.
Well, and it seems to be part of the mandate that they're putting forth, though, as being community partners. Are they looking for community partnerships? Is that something the hospital is going to be looking into as well? We're going to find out in just a few moments what the response may be from Rob on that one. But we're going to take a break first. We'll be right back with more of The Drive Time, more of Consider This Live on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
From municipal to provincial to federal politics, from sea to sea to sea, conversation that encompasses all things political. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm Dave Glover, host of The Drive Time, Monday to Fridays from 4 to 7 p.m., where we bring you interesting conversation from various perspectives, here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
In 37.
Bingo!
Was that a bingo?
Come on out to Hometown Bingo and try your luck. Open 7 days a week. Bring a friend and have some fun socializing while having a chance to win some money. Hometown Bingo has 35 charitable sponsors, and last year over $370,000 went back into the local communities in Northumberland. We are located at 884 Division Street. Call 905-372-5426 or go to hometownbingo.ca. Our license number is 7884.
The music you like is the music we play. Listen to Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest in studio for our weekly installment of Consider This Live is Rob Washburn. And we have been talking about the new strategic plan for the Northumberland Hills Hospital. Now, read that last part, if you could, those two last pieces, just to talk about what they're, because, you know, this is why we're talking about collaboration with things like mental health issues and dental care, for instance, because part of what they're saying in this is that they are looking for community partnerships.
Well, it's interesting because the first bit that I talked to you, that I mentioned was their strategic plan and objectives. But there's another section within the report there where they flesh things out, and they write here, and I'm just going to read it for the listeners. Acting as a catalyst for conversations, where appropriate, we will seek to enhance and promote health services and the capacity within our community. Working with our community partners, we will provide comprehensive care through collaboration and innovation. Then they talk about the specific priorities, support the development of more integrated health care experience for patients in our community. And under that, they say, collaborate with partners to create more seamless and integrated care pathways, which means ways in which you can access and use services. Work with community partners to identify and address service gaps in Northumberland Hills mm-hmm. Hospital and across our region. And that's the kind of stuff that you and I have been talking about, Dave.
Yep.
Then the second one is develop innovative local partnership opportunities. And under that, the specifics are support the development of efficient information and resource sharing to maximize efficiency among partners, organizations, and second, to address healthcare needs in our communities through innovative governance collaboration with local care providers and organizations. So I think, you know, it's the kind of stuff that you and I were just talking about mm-hmm. right now. And I want to emphasize, I really feel strongly that they're in a great position to provide leadership and to really make things happen in our community. And I hope they'll take the opportunities and do that so that people do have these pathways, these access points where they can get the things that they need when they need them. Because let's be honest, when you're sick or you need drugs or you've got a sore mouth or whatever that is, you just want to be looked after. Right.
Well, yeah. Well, when you're in pain or you're uncomfortable due to an illness, an ailment of some kind, whether it's a mental issue or a dental issue or even a physical issue. You know, I went into the hospital about a week ago. Actually,
no.
It was a week ago yesterday. Monday I went in
there.
Oh, dear.
Well,
yeah, you can still see the bruises on my arm,
holy
actually.
Cow.
Whereas I mean, it was good service, but, you know, they really need to focus on how they can take blood from people. But I got to say, I was in and out in 3 hours. In and out in 3 hours.
Get out.
went in there. I had just so people go, what the hell were you doing in the hospital? A couple of dislocated ribs on my right side, just on the floaters. Yeah, there was a.
Ouch.
They're problematic for a lot of people. But anyway, in and out in 3 hours. So I got to say, the service was great.
Mm-hmm.
I went in there on a Monday night, thought, okay, I could be long. I don't know. In and out in 3 hours. I'm very happy about the service. Very happy about being seen quickly. I have nothing but praise for them. And I think they do a good job.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because in the report, under the section what we heard, they talk about the patient experience, and they say a vast majority of stakeholders agreed Northumberland Hills Hospital provides high-quality service.
Mm-hmm.
Stakeholders indicated satisfaction with Northumberland Hills Hospital's delivery of service. And while wait times for treatment is identified as a concern, the majority of stakeholders express satisfaction with the breadth of services provided.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just a great example of, of that similar experience, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I would definitely echo what they have already heard. But again, if they can be that link, that linchpin, that anchor, if you will,
mm-hmm.
For those other services, mental, dental, and other,
mm-hmm.
Then obviously that is something that needs to be explored. And again, it's a great opportunity to have that conversation through the hospital with the LHINs as well, because it's something that the local health integration networks, whether it's the Eastern LHIN, the Central East, or even Southwestern, Northern LHINs, whatever, doesn't matter where the LHIN is, it's about integrating health. That's what the local health integration network should be all about, right? Integrating all of those services through one continuous accessible entree. If it has to be the hospital, then so be it.
So we'll have to get the chief executive officer and the board chair back maybe in June, and we'll have them talk about this some more, mm-hmm. and talk a little bit more about these community partnerships, because that would be really interesting to hear how they're intending to proceed.
Well, and they may have a new board chair by then, right?
I would hope so, and that would be one of the reasons
I know
we'd
that
have
Jack
them
Russell
come.
is
moving on.
Moving on. Absolutely. I don't know how long he's been the chair, but he's been the chair for a while.
Quite some time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact amount of time, but you're right. It's been long.
Yeah. Well, are we moving on?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's talk. Now, some of the other subjects that we've talked about, sexual assault, of course, future of the Coburg Catholic Schools, that conversation we had just a couple of weeks ago. And it's interesting because there is a consultation ongoing right now with the provincial government. The next public consultation, by the way, takes place at the Isaiah Tubbs Conference Center at 1642 County Road 12 in Prince Edward County. That's on May 12th. That's this week between 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. And because in Ontario, about 15% of all students are enrolled in rural public schools. In many rural communities, there has been a decline in the number of school-aged children. And we want to hear your thoughts, since the Ontario government wants to hear your thoughts on how we can serve those students effectively and make the best use of public resources. Now, the reason I also want to discuss this, of course, is because of this landmark court decision in Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a situation in Saskatchewan recently, listeners, you may not have heard about this, and you may have, where a community in Saskatchewan has no public school. I guess they didn't have enough kids, so all of the children in the area are enrolled in the Catholic school, in their separate school system. Well, an issue was brought to court because some families who go to that school didn't want their kids to take part in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't interested in their religious education.
Yep.
Well, part of being in a separate school is you're exposed to a religious education. And so these people took umbrage with that because it is a publicly funded school board,
mm-hmm.
which is what we have in Ontario. Because, again, we have two public school systems in Ontario, listeners. We have the separate school system. It's called the separate school system. And we have the public school system. But for all intents and purposes, they're both public schools. They're both publicly funded. They both are funded through tax payments.
Mm-hmm.
You can divert your tax dollars to the separate school or to the public board,
mm-hmm.
which ultimately means we have two public school systems. So I wonder how that situation is going to have an impact on this situation with regards to rural education and the studies that are ongoing.
Well, one of the things that has come out since some of the announcements were made, in especially the one in Picton and down in Hastings, Prince Edward,
mm-hmm.
Was the fact that these are smaller schools in small communities.
Yeah.
And first of all, you're hearing for the first time, very, very vocal opposition, not just from parents, but from municipal politicians who are saying, look, you take away these schools, you're basically going to sentence us to oblivion because we've already lost our industry from the NAFTA. Mm-hmm. We no longer have a strong economy. We're depending on families to live here. And a school is a critical piece. You lose the school, we're going to lose families. They're going to move elsewhere. So, you know, they're trying to come up with innovative ways to keep the schools open, mm-hmm. to diversify, create hubs. And I know of one group up near Madoc area, Queensborough, where they're fighting to keep the school up there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they're proposing is a multi-use health community clinic combined with recreational facilities. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, during the day, they'll be able to have
So it's a kids. School, it's a daycare center, it's a community center, it's a healthcare. It's a community hub.
Yep, and that's some of the proposals that are coming out. But I can tell you, the politicians down in Picton were some of the most vocal in terms of articulating this feeling that rural Ontario is especially the smaller communities, the villages, the towns, mm-hmm. are really being hurt by the fact that they're losing their schools. I mean, let's take Port Hope for example. Could you imagine if the high school in Port Hope closed?
I couldn't.
The numbers don't improve much, and I've heard, talk nothing concrete, but Port Hope High School has appeared on lists before about closures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be a devastating thing for that community.
It would. Well, and where would the kids then go to high school? Would they then be bused to Cobourg?
They're talking about bused
to Cobourg. Well, and again, I mean, you know, we have had this sort of ongoing feuds between the two communities for generations.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how's that going to bode? I mean, that can't work. You know, unless they, I mean, that, you know, you get a lot of people in Port Hope going, okay, so now they're moving the kids to one high school. I mean, how much closer to amalgamation can you get?
Well, but I mean.
Right? I mean, you know, they hate the A word, but.
Well, you know, I mean, it's just hard on families. So, but I think this added dimension of the politicians getting involved. And I mean, I mentioned Picton in particular, but throughout Eastern Ontario, the wardens, local councillors, mm-hmm. all of them are speaking up in opposition. The other thing that was interesting, too, is that People for Education, which is a Toronto-based lobby group for representing parents, and they lobby the Ontario government.
Mm-hmm.
They usually do stuff that's Toronto-centric. But this time, in the last few weeks, people may have noticed a report from them has come out. Mm-hmm. And they've been very, very vocal about how this is going to affect rural communities.
Yep.
And the sustainability of rural communities.
Absolutely.
So I think that, you know, there really needs to be some acknowledgement by the provincial government. And I know,
but we, you know what,
people should go to this meeting.
They should go to the meeting, and it is the public consultation. By the way, the public meeting takes place. This is the next one. The next one's in Picton at the Isaiah Tubbs Conference Center, 1642 County Road 12. But the next one after that is on May 23rd in Amherstburg, then in Honey Harbor, which is north and west to us in Port Severn. Thedford is having theirs. Markdale, Wawa, Nipigon, all of these places are having the public consultations. Also, you can go online. And you can read the discussion paper, Supporting Students and Communities. One of the issues they discuss in these Supporting Students and Communities is how schools are funded. And maybe this is something that that Ontarians need to look into as well. But, you know, we talked about how this affects rural communities. But, you know, I lived in a neighborhood in Scarborough where there were literally two public schools within walking distance. One was woefully underfunded. The other one was being funded by a parent association. This, of course, was before Mike Harris killed those types of programs. You know, we were raising money for in-classroom computers and all kinds of things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was growing up, and I'm sure when you were growing up, the public school was the hub. I mean, I remember when I was a little kid that, you know, on Fridays, they used to show movies in the gym at my school, the local Boy Scouts, the Beavers, Cub Scouts, and the Brownies would all meet at our school. We had all these different programs. And then when they started slashing budgets, and then custodians, they didn't want to pay custodians to be in the schools late, so they wanted to close schools earlier, and then they started charging fees for these organizations and groups to start having. And, of course, that started to kill off the local public school as your community hub.
Well,
but in smaller communities like ours, these are vital, vital hubs.
It's interesting you should mention that, because when I first moved here in 1988, I remember taking a course offered by Durham College at Port Hope High School, mm-hmm. in woodworking. And I was
because they have the shops.
Because they had the shops, and nobody was using them at night. I could go over. I learned had a wonderful time learning great things, and it was over at the Port Hope High School. So I mean, there's a whole wide range of uses that could take mm-hmm. place. The other thing, though, I mean, just to talk about funding, one of the things that we didn't talk to the guests about when we talked about the future of Coburg Catholic Schools was the funding model.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they're bureaucrats, so it really wasn't appropriate to talk to them because that's not their concern. It's mm-hmm. a political concern. But you wonder what would happen if there was an amalgamation of the schools. I mean, they're talking about expanding Notre Dame School. Huge investment. We just spent a ton of money on CR Gummo mm-hmm. and expanding that. And, you know, could it have been more cost efficient to, at the time of expanding CR Gummo, that we could have opened up even more space and accommodated more students?
Mm-hmm.
Or if, you know, we could have saved ourselves the expansion of CR Gummo, if we could have filled chairs in some of the Catholic schools locally.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's the crossover situation because, under the previous Conservative government, when they decided, and this was Bill Davis who started mm-hmm. funding separate schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for those of you that don't know this, or don't remember it. And, of course, they have created two tiers of education in this province. You know, and I've talked to lots of parents who say, well, I'm going to send my kid to the Catholic school because they have a better program. Why? Well, they have better programming because funds are being diverted from, in my estimation, from the public school program into the separate school program, essentially creating two public school systems in this province, which I think really doesn't make any sense at all. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of my rant there, how are Ontario schools funded? But let me read this to you, because this comes to the Ministry of Education. The largest factor in Ontario's education funding formula is enrollment, because it's the number of students that drives the needs for teachers, classrooms, and other educational supports. However, the funding formula also provides additional supports to account for the varying costs associated with running schools in different parts of the province, especially those in more rural and remote areas. These supports account for approximately one-third of all of the funding, and they are the reasons the Ontario government is investing more in rural schools than ever before. Since 2013, annual funding for rural boards has increased by nearly $200 million. Boards in rural and remote areas currently get extra funding at $1,200 per student than urban boards, and this recognizes the challenges of serving students in schools that are distant from big cities. Widely spread out and smaller than elsewhere in the province, and the higher costs of professional and other services as well as supplies. And we've also built 60 new schools, 250 additions, and 140 major retrofits in Ontario's rural education program since 2003. Further funding that particularly aims to help rural and remote schools and their boards includes the School Foundation Grant, which provides funding for principals, vice principals, and other support staff and office supplies. It recognizes that remote schools require a higher level of funding support than other schools. Also, the School Operations and Renewal Grant, which supports the cost of operating and maintaining, repairing school facilities. It recognizes that remote schools require additional funding to maintain underutilized space, which goes to the point you were making a minute ago about using those spaces after hours. The Geographic Circumstances Grant, which provides higher levels of teacher staffing, support for remote schools and provides additional funding to recognize the additional costs in small, dispersed and remote schools boards, and also differentiated special education needs amount of the Special Education Grant, which recognizes the needs for higher levels of funding for small, dispersed and remote boards. So again, a lot of that has to deal with that. So basically the conclusion is, looking forward into the future, the government's committed to continuing to invest and support schools and students in rural schools and communities. It is especially the responsibility of everyone involved in the delivery of education and building strong communities to come together around the common goal of ensuring that students are receiving high quality education. So the usual spin on that. But
well, it's interesting you should mention this, because one of the things that in the post-secondary area where I work at Loyalist College, one of the things that we've talked about around the table is the ability of people who live in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
I can live in Scarborough, and my kid can take a bus across to Humber College, and they can live at home, save tons of money on residence, mm-hmm. on food, all kinds of costs, because they have a public transit system that'll take them across, literally, 100, 200 kilometers across the city to a school. But here in rural Ontario, kids don't have the same access.
Nope.
You have to have a car if you want to drive in and you want to live at home. And there is no support. And one of the things that I've always thought would be amazing is if we could work with school boards to utilize their bus system to bring college students into the high schools at certain points, and then having a bus system that could pick people up along that route at the high schools and bring them into Loyalist College. And that way that those students could maybe get a bus pass that would cover the, hopefully cover a part or all of the cost of running that bus system, but they might better utilize the current public school bus system, but also give students who are living in rural areas a chance to live at home while they study without having the additional cost of having to operate a car or to live in residence.
That's a good point. Very good point. And that would be a darn good use of public resources as well. We'll be back after the break, listeners.
Hi, I'm Kevin Stewart, and if you're counting down to the weekend by the time you reach the middle of the week, join me Wednesday mornings at 10. We'll have the midweek warm-up with a little inspiration, views you can use. We also respect the instrumental. Great tunes without lyrics. Well, mostly. And varying takes on tunes in the songs the same. Your requests are always welcome, and you just never know who might drop in to speak about what's going on in Northumberland. And remember, once the show's done, so is half the work week. So join me for the midweek warm-up, Wednesdays at 10 on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
When it comes to computers and the internet today, it's hard to know who and what to trust. When something goes wrong, you could call your daughter, your brother-in-law, that kid who mows the lawn, or you could call Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional. Computer Solutions, located at 208 King Street East in Colborne, is open 6 days a week. They have ample parking and convenient hours, plus you can arrange to have your system picked up or dropped off right from your door. Call Computer Solutions today at 905-355-3622 or stop by their store in Colborne at 208 King Street East. Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional.
Are you interested in volunteering? How about broadcasting? Come volunteer with us at Northumberland 89.7. Call 905-372-2391 and volunteer today.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. We have been talking about education and the public consultations that are happening. If education is as important to you as it is to so many other people, you don't have to have kids in school, by the way. You could be an adult whose kids are already out of the house. And still, I think education is a priority for you. There is a public consultation happening at the Isaiah Tubbs Conference Center at 1642 County Road 12 in Prince Edward County. That's in Picton, between 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. on May 12th, 2017. By the way, for more information or to send feedback or to read the discussion paper, you can go to www.ontario.ca/page/consultation Ontario Rural Education Strategy, or probably just Bing or whatever your search engine is. And type in, or for more information, you can email them at information.met@ontario.ca for more information on that one. Some of the other topics we have covered, obviously, the farmer's tax credit and other issues like that, rebates for landlords, budget debate for Hamilton Township, all of these things we talked about. And for the most part, what are we talking about? We're talking about the affordability of living here in Northumberland County.
It's amazing to think what farmers are going through right now. You know, oftentimes I think we don't always appreciate the stresses that farmers undergo just to operate their business. But this thing with the tax credit and the incredible increase in prices, and I thought Mr. Butter did an incredibly clear job of explaining how it works, where, you know, people are coming along, they're seeing these lands next to the highway being sold for literally millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and somebody then up at Rice Lake says, well, you know, the buddy down there got X dollars for their property, I want to get close to, if not the same, for mine.
Right.
And while the one transaction was a commercial transaction for property development, now a farmer comes along, wants to expand their farm up in the middle of the county, and they're paying huge increases. And then, of course, those assessments go up. And then the farmers are seeing these terrible increases in property tax.
That's right.
And again, another strain on their already limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of it. But as I was telling you on the break, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said they're leaving Coburg. And I said, oh, good gravy. Why are you leaving? And they said, because it's too expensive to live here. So we're going to take advantage while the market's hot in Coburg. We're going to sell our house.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting a huge amount of money for it. And they're moving out to Warkworth.
Yeah.
And they're going to commute into Coburg for their employment. So I thought, holy cow, that's pretty incredible. And I've heard, literally developers coming in and buying 3 and 4 lots at a shot to develop, or even buying multiple houses.
Yep.
and paying cash.
Well, we talked about this before. Remember, mm-hmm. I told the story about the woman who was on vacation and she sold her house and went $100,000 over asking. And she said she was happy. She got over $100,000 in asking. She's going to be able to buy another house elsewhere mortgage free. Still, what does that do for her kids? Does that mean her kids are going to ever be able to buy a house in Coburg? Probably not. You know, we know the province right now is looking at Toronto and the hot housing market there, mm-hmm. and in the GTA. But they're not looking at communities further afield like ours. They're mm-hmm. looking west. They're looking to Hamilton and Burlington and places like that and Brandt. But they're not looking east. And it is affecting us here as well. You know, people who have decided they're going to sell their house in Toronto and move to a place like ours, where they have no problem paying $100,000 over asking because they got $500,000 over asking for their home, right? So what are we seeing? We are slowly watching this gentrification, if you will, or people who move out of the city to the rural country, and they're moving to places like Coburg, they're moving to places like Crammy, they're moving to Port
mm-hmm.
Hope,
mm-hmm.
and what they're doing, sadly, they're getting a sweet deal, but at the same time, they're driving the prices up out here. Which means, I mean, look at the rental market. We've talked about yep. the inability to rent out, even out here.
Well, Dave, it goes beyond that, though, when you start to think about a couple of other factors as well. And that is, a lot of these people are part of this boomer bubble
mm-hmm.
that's only going to last another 15, maybe 20 years before we see the end of it. And then what's going to happen to all these developments that we've seen, this expansion and this capacity that we've seen increase in the amount of housing stock that we have?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? Are we going to be left with all these vacant homes that nobody's going to want to buy because they're either too expensive or they're too big? I mean, where's the long-term vision? And a part of that is, I think the municipalities are so hungry for increases in assessment. They want to see development because they know that if they don't, you know, see a certain level of development in the mm-hmm. community, you know, that'll account for 2, 3, sometimes 5%
yeah, but this
of the increase in taxes.
And that is so short-sighted because you're going to get that development fee once. It's a one-time fee.
But on top of that, though, you're increasing the overall assessment because people
exactly.
move in. And all of a yep. sudden, instead of having a 6 or 7% increase in the budget, they have a 2%, but you don't always pay attention to the fact that the assessment went up 5% in the past year.
Right.
And that's the smoke and mirrors that makes you crazy because
exactly.
What's going to happen? We're going to have all these services, all of a sudden these budgets, and then this mm-hmm. boomer bubble is going to disappear. And suddenly we're going to lose, you know, 50% of our population, and mm-hmm. we're going to have all this stock. Who's going to live there?
Well, and that's the problem we've talked about before with regards to the assessed rate and the mill rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the disparity between the two. And that's not ever discussed because what the MPAC assessment has done is given municipal governments the opportunity to say, well, your taxes may have gone up, but that wasn't us. That was because of MPAC. Well, you know, there is a disconnect between the mill rate and the rate from MPAC that is never discussed. They never talk about this disconnection between the two of those. And that is what's driving up the rates.
So it's almost a two-pronged thing when you think about it,
yep.
Dave, because you've got this addiction by municipal leaders to constantly develop, constantly expand,
mm-hmm.
constantly be putting through plans. And, you know, we've talked about it when it comes to business, when we talked about the closing of Sears. And, you know, we've got a mall that's a huge, huge development.
Oh, and they're offering discounts like you wouldn't believe.
And then we've got a retail space being built over at the corner of Burnham and Elgin. And you say, how does that work?
Never mind that. I mean, you know, you talk about development and development fees. What about Mark Wallace, the mayor of Brighton today, saying that he's going to take the municipality to the OMB because they won't approve his sewage lines as a developer? I mean, you know, how hungry for development revenue are you at that point? Because this is laughable.
the political conflict of interest is off the scale. I don't know how it's allowed. I know he can do it. I know the rules allow him to step back and not be part of the vote. But you know, to turn around, how's that going to affect the political relationships between these people when they're supposed to be working together?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And how's that going to affect the democracy
exactly
within that community?
The decision making. Oh, we're not friends anymore.
Well, yeah, we're not friends anymore. No. We're still democracy.
Want to listen to Dame Nellie Melba singing Mimi from La Boheme in 1907? Audrey Hepburn telling you what's worse than the blues. The last time Judy Garland sang Over the Rainbow. I'm Pat Bryan, and I call my show I Know What I Like, and I like the magic of radio. 8 o'clock every Sunday evening. There's nothing else like it on the air. Right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
I'd like to tell you all about an important upcoming fundraiser in our community. The Northumberland Fair Share Food Banks help put food on the table each and every week, and they need your help to do it. Gulfport Food Banks help raise $30,000 for milk and fresh food for local families. Join Northumberland Fair Share Friday, June the 2nd at the Port Hope Golf and Country Club. Tickets are $150 and include lunch, buffet dinner, prizes, and so much more. Check out Golf for Food Banks on Facebook or phone Robin at 647-526-9012 to register. Your support is needed today.
Missed your favorite program on Northumberland 89.7? Don't worry, you can catch up on news, events, and missed shows on our website at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the Drive Time. Now, a couple of things that we didn't discuss this, but these are some headlines I think that that we're probably going to take a closer look at a little later on, maybe not today. Millions of Ontario workers get no sick pay. But that could change. The Ontario government is apparently poised, until the Fraser Institute has a look at it and tells them they can't do it because it's just not reasonable. Working as a personal trainer at Good Life, you don't get paid for your sick days. And so many people out there right now are not getting paid for sick days. It's because of the precarious nature of employment right now. We have this on-time employment where we're only bringing people in as we need them. What is it that the Ontario government can do about this, you think, Rob?
Well, it's interesting you should ask me that because I'm doing some work down with the college right now in regards to preparing students for the workforce of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that my research has shown is how much we're going to this type of labor force that you know, we're moving away from careers, away from full-time jobs, even away from part-time jobs,
yep.
Moving to project-oriented jobs which pay 50% less without
on-time employment.
We're talking now, it was blown me away the other day. I was reading about things called task work, which is done a lot virtually, where you literally get one task to write some code or to work on a website or do some social media.
Mm-hmm.
One task, you're paid literally pennies.
Yeah,
for the task, and then that's it.
Well, they call it piecework, right?
Well, it's electronic piecework. The other thing is micro tasks now. So what they're doing is they take a project, and instead of hiring you and me, the two of us, to work on an entire project, we'd have a rounded out skill set, and we would bring many talents and capabilities to the table. Now what we're doing is we break that down so that there's one supervisor, and then the whole project is done by a series of people unrelated, who do very, very tiny bits of work, like mm-hmm. an assembly line, and at the end, the project comes out at the end. Just blew me away. So more and more, and I've written about this, you and I have talked about it mm-hmm. countless times, is, you know, what are we going to do to help precarious workers? And I'm glad to see that the Ontario government's going to take a small step, but it's too incremental for my liking, and it also doesn't address a larger problem, which is the economic impact of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving towards more automation, precarious work. Who's going to buy stuff in the economy if nobody's making a decent dollar?
And we have talked about this relentlessly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say we're a consumer economy, but when people can no longer afford to consume, what do we have then? There's an interesting story here. This goes back to March 29th. Hard work, long hours, little pay. This is about a woman who works as a building superintendent. She estimates that she's basically making $1.18 an hour. Now, she gets a free apartment, apparently, so and that gets rolled into it. But that's rolled into all of the costs, and she's on call 24/7, well, you know, and
Dave,
she's essentially earning $1.18 an hour. That's slave labor, as far as I'm concerned.
I was talking to somebody who is out working with local employers, trying mm-hmm. to connect local employers and young people for jobs. And believe it or not, the person said to me, local employers are complaining that they can't find people
yep.
to work.
Kim Rudd told me the same thing when I interviewed her last time at Cogeco. So did Lou Rinaldi.
So here's the thing. What's the problem? And the problem in my mind is that they're wanting to hire somebody for minimum wage to do about 25 different tasks. You know, they want you to be a receptionist, an accountant, a distributor, do the floors, do the windows. I mean, it's ridiculous what some people ask you to do in a job.
Absolutely.
And yes, I understand that we need people that are multi-talented, can multitask. All of that makes a lot of sense. But it's incredible what people are looking for. I also think, too, you know, the kinds of businesses that are around here, they're small businesses. A lot of them, you know, they're not very well organized. So people end up doing all kinds of things that are never in a job description because they're so hard up for people. So I wonder, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, so let's start paying people a living wage and stop bringing them in precariously, you know, 2 or 3 hours at a time or three to 5 hours at a time. And maybe we should be offering full-time jobs and maybe you should have a benefit package and, you know, things like that. I mean, where do we find the happy medium in all of that? I don't know.
No, it's true enough. And I mean, the long and short of it is we always hear this, you know, we hear this from people all the time, especially, you know, people who have good jobs, people that have benefits. Oh, you know, people have coverage. People have coverage. Like when they were talking earlier with the liberals and their plan to give prescription coverage to people 24 and under. Oh, well, what about the people who are already covered? More than 70% of workers in Ontario have no coverage. Did you know that?
Yep.
Those are numbers from the provincial government. 70% of working Ontarians have no coverage whatsoever. They don't have dental. They don't have eyeglasses. They don't have prescription coverage for their kids. So the people that are saying to the provincial government, well, what about the people who already have coverage? Are we not just giving them coverage? What, those 30%? Is that who we're worried about? When 70% of Ontarians have no coverage whatsoever? Don't tell me that we're going to be double dipping. Don't tell me that there's people out there that are going to be double dipping. There may be. But the 80-20 rule still applies here. Basically, 80% of people in this province who are working in precarious labor or in other forms of labor who have no coverage whatsoever. I mean, these are people who can't even take a sick day, for crying out loud. And we got conservatives whining about how we're going to be giving people coverage that already have coverage. Well, that's crap.
But even more important is how is it that corporations are getting out of their responsibility in all of this? They pay the least amount of taxes, and it's property taxpayers, it's regular taxpayers like you and I, Dave,
mm-hmm.
that are having to fund. We're funding literally our own programs.
Yeah.
And if we're not making enough money and we can't afford to pay those taxes,
mm-hmm.
what happens to those programs? So, you know, I mean, it's a vicious cycle. And
it's workers subsidizing other workers. And you know, this is why I say, you know, when they talk about corporate tax cuts, I am against that. When they're talking about rolling back other provisions, I'm against that. You know, here's some of the things that the Ontario government's looking at. We're going to have to wrap it up, unfortunately, Rob, but here's some of the things the government's looking at, some of the options the government's looking at through their special advisory. Making paid sick days mandatory. Boosting the minimum required vacation pay to 3 weeks per year, not just the current two. Lowering the threshold at which overtime pay gets kicks in. To 40 hours, down from the current 44 hours. Thank you, Mike Harris. Abolishing the lower minimum wage for students under the age of 18. Because right now, if you are a server in a bar or you're under 18, the minimum wage is actually less than the provincial minimum wage. That needs to change. Requiring employers to pay that part-time employee the same as a full-time worker gets paid doing similar jobs. Now, right now, again, if you have a full-time employment, you can pay someone less who's on part-time, even though they're working the same job. Casual contract workers are forcing employers to post employee schedules in advance, not just do this, oh, I need you right now, can you come in? How many people can come into work on a short notice like that? Compensating workers for last-minute schedule changes, limiting the proportion of an employer's workforce that can be from a temp agency, because that's what they're doing, folks. Also, unionizing. Banning and limiting the use of replacement workers during a strike, making it easier for employees to franchise to form a union, and also allowing domestic workers employed in private homes to form unions. Under the Ontario employment laws, currently some rules, including those governing overtime, don't apply to certain types of jobs. Now, the advisors are considering whether to lift any of these exemptions that currently apply to managers, janitors, IT professionals, which was going to what you were talking about, residential care workers. They're also considering whether intern and trainees should be covered by the Employment Standards Act. Are you a worker who could benefit from changes to the Ontario employment laws? Are you an employer concerned that changes will harm your business? You can send an email to the CBC, but also, more importantly, contact the provincial government. And folks, stop contracting out the work. I'm Dave Glover. You've been listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. We were going to end the show with taking care of business, but unfortunately we don't have enough time to do that. We're going to go right into Cedar Rail. I want to thank Rob Washburn for being my regular wingman here on Consider This every Wednesday, which is heard between the 6 and 7 o'clock hours on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. We don't write the world, folks, but we do bring it to you each and every day. Thanks for tuning in.